on the show this week here. I reached out here now, as you've heard in previous podcasts, and also follow on Twitter at TJ McLoon. I work with the local Austin, Texas-based wrestling promotion, Inspire Pro Wrestling here, which, as some would say, it's the leader in Central Texas wrestling, the best organization to work for as a worker, male or female, as someone in the front office. Some would say, if you just so happen to check their Pro Wrestling Tees store, Inspire Pro Wrestling at Pro Wrestling Tees, it may be on that the description of their store. I'm not sure who wrote that or where they came from, but I heard whomever put that up there is a very talented individual, whoever wrote that. I'm putting myself over, much like I'm Roman or whomever else would like to do that. I'm like Kevin Nash in WCW, putting themselves over. So, with that long-winded introduction of myself and completely burying the lead here of my guest, which I do apologize, it's the voice of Inspire Pro Wrestling joining us this week, Iman Patton. Iman, what's going on, buddy?
Hey,
thank you for coming on here. Like I said, the voice of Inspire Pro, co-host of your own wrestling podcast as well. So, let me jump into this week's episode here. You've been doing Inspire Pro Wrestling play-by-play man work for about how long, and how did you even get involved with Max and Justin in the company?
Well, I've been doing it with Inspire Pro from the very beginning, since the company started, which as of next month will be 3 years, which is very cool.
Right.
Yeah, I had known Justin, or as I know him, Biff, from...
Yeah.
From just the local wrestling scene. I moved up to San Antonio to go to school in 2011, and I'm originally from Corpus Christi, Texas, and that area really doesn't have a lot of independent wrestling. There's, I think, one company there now, but I remember once I moved up to San Antonio, there was so much more access. I had different stuff around San Antonio and Austin and other stuff, so I started going to more local independent wrestling shows. That's where I met Justin. I found out that he was starting Inspire Pro Wrestling, and you know, had told him that, you know, I'd be willing to help doing, you know, anything he needed of me, you know, if you know, he needed anyone to just set up or do, you know, even the most like small tasks that he needed done. And he had asked if I wanted to do commentary, which was a pretty big dream of mine. It was something I always kind of wanted to do. I never thought I'd have the opportunity to kind of get into the wrestling business, and going at it for close to 3 years now, so it's definitely been real fun.
So when you do your work at the shows, formerly at the Marchesa Hall and Theater, now with a new location to be announced coming up soon, with I believe the next show coming up, it's Inspire Pro Forever. I'll let the powers that be say when and where and when that next event is. But I will say, listeners, it is coming soon. It is coming soon, the next show. But, you know, at the shows, you're a one-man show. You're doing the play-by-play. You're like Joey Styles in ECW. But there's times when you'll have someone jump on as color commentary. What do you prefer? Do you prefer having someone to bounce stuff back and forth on, or do you prefer to be, you know, the lone voice on calling a match?
Without a doubt, prefer a two-man team.
Okay.
Single commentary is probably one of the more difficult things I've ever had to do. Most of the time, if I am on commentary, I'm joined normally by a Nigel Rabbit, which is a pleasure and a curse at the same time. if he's busy, obviously, because of his various roles managing Inspire Pro Wrestling, his Rapid Empire, usually we'll have a wrestler or so come on and do it with me. But, it's single commentary, single-person commentary is probably one of the most difficult things you can possibly do to a person, because I think there is such a importance to having somebody to play off of, having somebody to sort of riff with, in a sense. And to me, my best work is when I have somebody like a Nigel Rabbit or another, you know, wrestler to kind of riff off of and create a conversation, and it allows things to flow more naturally, I feel. I think Joey Styles is one of the rare people where his style of commentary, he's able to execute by himself, and it's still done perfectly well. I think, you know, there's only a handful of people that could do the same thing. It's a very difficult job to do it by yourself. So I'm glad to have some people carry me, so to speak.
So, you know, like carrying you, having Nigel in there, I think I saw True jump in there a couple times, a couple other men jump in there as well. What about whenever you see some companies like the modern day WWF or WWE on Raw? I'm not sure they do on SmackDown as well, but they have a three-man booth. Would that be a little too many cooks in the kitchen if, like, say, someone else would come up and join you and someone else at Inspire Show?
It can be. I've done some three-man before, and as long as it's the right combination of people, I feel like it can work very well. As long as you have sort of... Obviously, I think the important thing is that everybody who is on commentary, so to speak, whether it's a two-man, three-man team, has sort of their defined role in what they're supposed to execute. If everyone is sort of working together in that same role and is able to execute in that same way, it can work very well. I've done three-man before, and it has worked well in the past. Mm-hmm. It just really depends on the story that you want to get across in that particular match. Sometimes if it's sort of a multi-layered story, it's could work to have somebody that provides another perspective to add on to things. It just really is all, it depends on the situation, I think, so to speak. I think sometimes it can get in the way, but as long as you have everybody sort of clearly defined on what they need to do, I think it can work.
Now, do you have any nightmare stories of, sometimes a wrestler to promote his story, they'll join commentary to, either go with a storyline or to try to hype up what's coming down the road. Do you have any of those situations where someone joined you in the booth and it was like pulling teeth trying to get something out of them to help either further what they're doing or just be, you know, any bit entertaining while they joined you?
Oh, man. I can't think of one in particular. I do know that there are cases where there are certain people that are more fit for commentary than others.
That's right.
Sometimes it's hard to get sort of people to kind of talk as much as they need to. I think when you have a wrestler coming out for commentary, I think it's important to have that wrestler be of a particular style and a style in which it's, you know, they're talking and their mic work, so to speak, is very important. On a mainstream level, like a Kevin Owens, for example,
right.
Someone who is so easy to kind of riff off of and can think on their feet, that works really well. I don't have any necessary horror stories, but I know there are times where it's like it is kind of hard to kind of pull stuff out of people and try to get more than like one word answers or something like that. I will say people like Nigel Ravitch are really amazing when it comes to always coming up with something. Another one that I can think of is like a JoJo Bravo.
Oh, yeah.
Who is literally a machine of different phrases and different things that you can add to a match. Like, he is amazing. And there's so many others. I've done work with like Pierre Abernathy and Evangelistico, the Submission Squad. They're great. And people like that are real, and it allows you to kind of get some material to rip off of, so to speak, and lead the conversation. So it's cool to work with those kind of people.
Well, doesn't it help with like Nigel and JoJo and just anyone else that I'm trying to think of down the line of someone that was a good color commentary? Just because the accents, you know, Nigel's English accent, JoJo has that Southern draw. You know, doesn't kind of help the add entertainment value in there?
No, totally. The bigger the personality, the better I find. It's like I said, it just allows you more to work off of. And it's funny because I'm very, in real life, I'm a very timid personality. Like, I'm not as sort of, like, crazy and over the top all the time. So it's almost better to have somebody like that to kind of pull that out of me every once in a while. So, yeah, I definitely would agree.
All right, last question here on Inspire before we get to our topics. And also I have a question with the WWE. They're commentating as well. And, you know, the wonderful, wonderful, very level-headed, very smart internet wrestling community that never overreacts to anything or never, blows
never
something.
Never at all.
Never. No. Completely level-headed, understands why some people lose, some people win, and why booking decisions happen because of other reasons. Always level-headed internet wrestling community. Your 3 years at Inspire Pro, What can you nail down your favorite match to call? Because I would say my favorite one that I wish I was there for was the Doom Angelus payoff to their long feud.
That one was very fun, I can definitely say. I called that with Nigel and, well, speaking of three-man themes, I called that with Nigel and Bryce Remsburg from Chikara Pro, and that's kind of like my... I had a lot of fun calling that one. And I don't know, the matches that, like, that one that, like, give you a lot of material to sort of work with as well are really fun. Ones that immediately stick out in my mind would probably be back in our, I think it was like our fourth show ever. Mm. It was Ray Rowe and Chris Hero, and I called that with ACH. That's actually available on our YouTube channel for free, and that is so much fun. It was one of the first times where I was like, oh wow, I'm calling this match. Like, that's amazing. I'm really glad that I get to call like little moments for me, like getting to call Athena's last. Right. Independent pro wrestling match is kind of a cool thing that I can put on my resume, I guess.
That is true.
Which is fun. There's a lot of really fun ones. I like calling... There's a lot of people... I like calling people, like, you know, any match with Ricky Starks, any match with, like, a Steve Arino and a Keith Lee. I like watching guys' stories, and I think that's one thing that we do really well in Inspire Pro Wrestling is our wrestlers' stories kind of progress over time and over the years. So to kind of do that on my end of things is really cool as well, to see them kind of progress as wrestlers and see their stories progress and to me kind of be the narrator of those stories, I think is something that's always really cool to me to be able to do.
Yeah, I know the story-wise, there was, I forget when exactly the date was, but Steve-O just happened to, he lost the match, and Sammy came out of nowhere, crushed the J Crown that it was on there that he had, or I forget exactly what the logistics were. Point being, there was a guy probably about two rows behind me, and I've told the story to Biss and Max as well. Just kind of seeing, like, is this guy a plan? Was this guy part of Steve-O's crew? What's going on here? Because this was probably a male. I'm 33. I'll be 34 in July. Probably about my age, about 30s, maybe late 20s. Look like your everyday normal person you would see, but as Sammy came out, said the J Crown was dead, this guy gets up, slams his seat in front of him, yells, "This is effing bullshit," and I swear to God, he had tears coming down his face like it was me being 3 years old watching Hogan lose to Andre because of the damn Hebner twins and getting screwed over by the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. Like, it was just crazy to see him buy that much into the story that he stormed out of the event. I didn't see him the rest of the show. So that made me think, like, was he a plant or whatever? But I think that he was a serious fan that was so involved in Steve-O's story that he got so upset, hit the front of his chair, hit the front back of the chair that was in front of him, and just stormed off with tears down his face. That's crazy, right?
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I think that's... To me, that's the thing I love the most about wrestling is that it's, in the end of the day, it's selling emotion. And I think that's, to me, that's the best wrestling you see, especially nowadays, is the ones that are the most emotional and the most kind of gripping, or the ones that people have invested their effort or time into. And to see those reactions kind of pay off is always a really fun feeling. That's the most enjoyment I get out of my job. And I know a lot of the guys behind the scenes in Inspire Pro is to see a story play out and see a crowd sort of go along for that ride and see that end result, I think is so, so amazing. Another one that comes to my mind is sort of the progression of Andy Dalton, who was probably the most hated person in Inspire Pro Wrestling for a majority of his time, and for them to slowly kind of understand more of Dalton and for them to turn their Die Dalton Die chance to Live Dalton Live is one of the coolest things I've ever experienced in my life. I was so shocked when that was happening. Like, honest, my reaction on commentary when that happens is extremely honest and flabbergasted into the fact that this crowd is able to sort of kind of, you know, go along with this with Dalton and go along with his journey. And I think that's really, I think that's what, that's why we do what we do in Inspire Pro Wrestling.
It's funny you bring up Andy. I don't like him personally just because I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, so the whole Andy Dalton Cincinnati Bengals, you know, the whole Die Dalton Die. I was like, I can get on board with that. You know, that guy, he doesn't do anything in the playoffs, but he does find a way to beat the Steelers every year in Week 14, which kills their playoff chances. But that's for a whole other reason. But no, that same show, that was the same one where Angelus took on Keith Lee. And there's a fan that always comes to all the Inspire shows who, you know, is in a wheelchair, but his buddy was right behind him, and the wheelchair-bound guy was yelling so many obscenities at Andy just because Andy was the heel at the time. And his buddy goes, "Hey, throw a drink on Andy. Go ahead." And I'm sitting maybe about a foot and a half behind the wheelchair man, you know, with my kind of my shoulder over to him. And wheelchair guy goes, "Yeah, good idea." And of course, the water cup goes about all of a foot and a half and goes all over the back of my neck and shoulder. And Andy just laughs at both of us, and I just hated him even more because of that.
Yeah, he definitely, he's a guy that really does feed off of a crowd and really knows how to kind of play with their heartstrings. And that's the sign of any good wrestler, I feel.
Yeah.
To get somebody that enraged where they think, yeah, I'm going to try to throw this water at him. That's amazing.
Well, you know, and this kind of brings up something that just pops in my head. I know I want to get on Michael Cole and WWE commentary and if he's being treated fairly or not for how hard his job is, especially I want to get your take with you being play-by-play man yourself. But the story that came out of Florida where a 50-year-old woman jumped in the ring and pointed a gun at a heel, is there a fine line where someone could take it too far, or is that just that person doing their job? You got the crowd so worked up.
I think on the part of a wrestler, I don't think it can be argued that they aren't doing their job. Like, unless that wrestler, say, is crossing the line in the sense of, putting their hands on a fan or something like that. I think if you're, trying to evoke a reaction, then is that reaction severe? Probably. But at the end of the day, I think that's the goal of any wrestler. Obviously, you should definitely gauge your audience, so to speak. I don't know if necessarily, there was a case where, like, people would have expected, oh, this person would pull a gun out on someone. It's a hard thing to say, but I think at the end of the day, like I said, wrestling, to me at least, is to sell emotion. And at the end of the day, hopefully that guy felt very proud of himself that he was able to evoke something from a certain amount of people.
Right.
The way that could happen. So.
Well, at least it's not like Joey Ryan having someone always grab his junk to get the big pop. So I guess you got to take the good with the bad sometimes. You sometimes have to outweigh the pros and cons. Okay, Michael Cole, question for you real quick. I think he has the toughest job in all professional wrestling in that he's the lead guy on the top show and the biggest wrestling promotion, but yet the level-headed internet wrestling community, as we said before, loves to say he's the worst commentator ever, and they don't know why he even has a job. What's your thoughts on what Michael does on a day-to-day, on a week-to-week basis? And I guess sometimes on Sundays, too, for pay-per-views.
Right. I would agree completely that I think he has one of the toughest jobs. I'm not the biggest fan of their commentary situation right now in the main show. However, I do understand that there's a lot of factors that go into it. They're working a 3-hour show weekly. I don't think I'd be even able to execute competently in any way with somebody in my ear sort of guiding me along the way. That to me would be the most distracting, like hindering thing to me. I would just kind of freeze up, I feel, in that kind of scenario. And they're doing that, 3 hours a week. Plus say they do a pay-per-view, it's a lot. It's a lot to go off of. And I don't know. I don't think that they, I don't think it's the best scenario right now what they do for their commentary, but in fairness, I don't think the amount of programming that WWE has right now, I don't think is the best. And I think that's more of a factor than the talent or ability of their commentary team. I think the worst problems their team kind of falls into because of the fact that the show is so long and you have so much content that you have to fill up to where, sometimes I think they kind of fall off the rails at times because it is a 3-hour long show that they're calling, and And not to mention all the stuff Michael Cole does beyond that, you know, the stuff he does. I know he does, like, the online, like, those sit-down interviews that people do for WWE. And he does so much that he has to do commentary-wise. I definitely don't consider him to be the worst. Mainly, and I'm not going to – I don't want to be that kind of guy, but mainly because I watch Impact. And I consider anybody to – who has issues with the main Raw commentary team to watch Impact. And keep in mind that their commentary is done in post.
Right.
And consider those factors. And I think people will kind of be a little bit more lenient when it comes to the main roster, Monday Night Raw kind of team.
Well, it's, and you figure with Cole, he has Vince, like you said, always talking in his ear. Plus probably another producer as well, whomever else can jump on the headset talking into his ear.
Yeah.
Plus he has to convey what's going on in the match and talking, plus working the corporate sponsor, plus get in whatever's going on social media, plus get in whatever they want to plug and promote. I mean, could you imagine if Max
There's so much they have to hit. So much they have to hit. It's really scary to think about.
Right, exactly. Plus throw it to JBL, plus throw it to, if, like you said, Owens is sitting there doing commentary, or make sure Byron gets his words in. But, I mean, I can only imagine if Max from Inspire was constantly yelling in your ear, and if you happen to flub a word of him just amping up his yelling from a 7 to a 10.
No, definitely. And I think also to say, like, if you want to compare it to, like, on an independent level, obviously what we do at Inspire Pro, for example, we'll have a story that we've kind of pitched and have planned out to do, and my job is to sort of execute that story and sort of narrate in a sense. I don't necessarily have a script. I don't necessarily have, maybe unless they're my own developed bullet points, I don't have bullet points that I need to make sure I hit. In the sense of, you know, look at WWE's end of things. Like you said, everything they have is very much laid out. And I've actually got to, one of my biggest sort of privileges is I've got to pick the brains of some really awesome people, like the former Rich Brennan recently released NXT announcer, and he was doing main event for a while. And yeah, like the biggest thing he kind of told me was the idea that, like, when you're positioned in that kind of a job, like, at the end of the day, your job is to execute the way your boss wants you to execute. So in that way, you know, all those bullet points, all those notes are what they want you to be hitting. And if you're not hitting those, then you're not executing in the way that you should be. So, yeah, when you look at it, say, on an independent level, it's much more – obviously, I have a story that I have to tell, but it's much more up to me and how I tell it. Obviously, maybe certain things they want kind of hit, but, like, there's much more freedom I get in that sense.
Right, right. And let me ask you this one last thing. If you're Cole, what's more annoying, having Vince constantly in your ear or having random egg internet troll come at you and say, no, it's this move called over in Japan, what they call correctly, not a cross-arm breaker?
In fairness, and I will say that I have been that guy at times with Michael Cole. I got a big sadness in my heart where it was one of the recent pay-per-views where he referred to it as the IGWP championship.
Oh,
and
I
cried inside. But I understand that's just a flub, and it's not his fault. Honestly, I like to think that Michael Cole doesn't care at this point what the internet thinks. I think he's making money. I think he's in that Jim Ross role where he is the Floyd of the company. And I think he is in a very good position right now to where he doesn't honestly care, in my opinion. You know, and good for him, because, you know, in the end of the day, as long as you're executing how your boss wants you to execute, then there's nothing, you know, there's nothing stopping you.
That's true. Yeah, I saw the Jim Ross show during Mania weekend. It amazed me how much he hates the This Is Awesome chant. It was very, very interesting. And also, Rob Van Dam, kind of past his prime. I know he's older, but he's looking like me post-marriage, post-kid, when you put on an extra 10 to 15 pounds, and you're like, hey, I'm good. I got
I was going to say, yeah, good for him. I mean, yeah, take that time, I guess, so to speak. But, yeah, it's interesting because, you know, especially – I feel like wrestling's product has changed so much in the last couple of years to where, you know, to consider what's right and what's wrong and what's good and what's bad. I think, yeah, there's stuff you can take from the past, and yeah, there's, you know, a history that you kind of have to abide by, but at the same time, like, wrestling's grown in such a way where it's like, I'm very open now, more than I've been, like, in the past before I got into wrestling when it comes to, like, stuff like that. So.
Right, right. Okay, so we're coming here towards the tail end, I guess last third, if you want to call it here, of the show. So I brought also Ebon on as well as a someone that could speak very intelligently and, you know, break down a lot better than I can with what happened in Orlando with the terrible terrorist attack, hate crime, whatever you want to call it, with the 50 people who happened to be shot dead inside the club on Saturday night. You know, your thoughts from what all happened are what? Because it's hard for me to break down, you know, what really had to process everything that just happened on Saturday night.
Yeah, it was a big processing thing for me as well. It's weird for me because I came out basically publicly around like a month ago, and
yeah,
privately to like family and friends like maybe like 2 months ago, and like it's weird. I remember sort of saying to myself the idea that like I never thought like that I would be that kind of person that's like sort of like very invested in this kind of stuff and like kind of you know, triumphing over like the gay community or anything like that. And then this kind of stuff happened and played out yesterday, and I was very angry and distraught and really kind of having a lot of thoughts over this. It's obviously a tragedy. It's, I was up there with some of the biggest tragedies in the United States, and I think it should open up I hope that it opens up a discussion that needs to be had and probably should have been had years ago. And I hope that the discussion is leaning in the ways that it should be leaning towards and not in a, you know, a commentary on race or on religion or aspects of things that I don't think plays a gigantic factor in this, personally.
And I saw the quote today from the shooter's father who said, "Hey, my son, this is a reflection on him." I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have the quote in front of me. But it was just weird how, man, and now I'm going to botch it, and I don't want to put bad words in, not bad words, but misquote him about what he said about how it's not like on him for being angry, but the religion says something about, you know, gays and just whatnot. So I had something there, Iman, and I completely botched it. So that's a flub. That's me calling it the IWCGP or whatever from Michael Cole from there. But no. So what I wanted to ask here is, I know Facebook does a great job with tragedies like this with checking in here. Is it kind of should they have turned this off for what happened in Orlando for just because you don't want someone to check in saying they're okay from the shooting in a gay club who might still be in the closet, right?
I think when it comes to sort of like that sort of scenario, it's very it's on that person to sort of have a true sense of themselves and a true sense of understanding. Like, yeah, I'm okay with people knowing what I am. I think it could be argued that way. Honestly, in that sense, I really don't care either way, because to know that people who I know personally who are in that area are safe is still good to know. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, you know, and it's so hard to say because, like I said, it shouldn't. I think we need to reach a consensus as a society where we get to a certain point where people don't have to worry about letting people know that they're safe in an area like this for fear of them, you know, being looked at a certain way.
Right. Yeah, it's like I always say to, you know, I had a sister-in-law who came out, and just in general with my friends or same with my wife here, I'd probably be the worst person to come out to, not because I hate or anti or whatever. It's just that I don't care. Like, cool, you're out.
Right.
Whatever. You're still the same person that you were about a minute ago. It's not like you came out and now you have flamingo wings attached to your shoulder blades. Like, great, you're
exactly.
out. Who gives a bleep?
Yeah, exactly. No, totally. And that's, like, when I came out, like, that's all I kind of wanted was for people to be like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, but I think, I don't know, I'm still very new, obviously, to the whole, like, being out part of my life now, and it's, I don't know, I do think there's part of me that was very, like, had a misunderstanding of how sort of culture has progressed. I do think we've come a long way, but I still think there's so much to be done. I remember, because I am currently dating someone, and when we were going out, we hold hands and be affectionate like any couple.
Right.
To give some context, my boyfriend lives in sort of a smaller town outside of San Antonio, and so this is a place that I was very worried about being affectionate with him in public, and I didn't receive any looks, I didn't receive any sort of side eyes, or nobody said anything. And I remember thinking, like, wow, like, this is cool. Like, we've come a long way as a culture.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously stuff like this happens, and you have to sort of realize that a lot of stuff is very ingrained in our society still. And not just what happened in Orlando, but then that post is made by the Texas Lieutenant Governor about reaping what you sow, and it's... There's still a lot of stuff that is ingrained in our society to think that, you know, what we have is sort of a deviance. And I don't think it's fair to blame, you know, Muslims or blame the Islamic religion because they are anti-gay.
Right.
Because there's a lot of religions in this country that are anti-gay. And I don't view, you know, everybody that follows the Muslim religion as being anti-gay, just like I don't view every Christian being anti-gay. I don't see every person who follows the religion of Christianity being like, I think it's Pastor Anderson, who made that video about how he was glad what happened on Sunday happened because there's 50 less pedophiles in the world. And I understand that there's not everyone who follows that religion feels that way. And I think to attest it to, well, this religion preaches this is really kind of short-sighted when it comes to the real problem in this whole scenario.
Right, right. Or as I always think, getting back to the transgender and the same-sex bathrooms, I grew up in a same-sex bathroom. My house currently is a same-sex bathroom, and... Yeah, we're very normal. We're not too worried about, you know, anything going on.
Yeah, and because it's been happening for years.
Right.
Like it's only, you know, the flame has only been fanned, so to speak, because of, you know, people bringing it to an attention to a degree where, you know, like newsflash, like transgender people have been in your bathrooms for many, many years now. Like it's been a thing, and there's been no problems, and. You know, I obviously that's a huge argument that people can, you know, discuss and go into. But I think, you know, I think there needs, at the end of the day, I feel gun control is a big thing. I also feel that there needs to be somebody, there needs to be a majority of people with enough power, with enough play, so to speak, publicly calling this out for what it is. Yes, it is a terrorist attack, but it's a domestic terrorist attack,
mm-hmm.
but it's also a hate attack.
Yeah.
And I've seen, you know, I can count on my one hand the number of politicians or people of that level of power who have been willing enough to say, to call this a hate crime, which I think is kind of clear cut in a sense.
Yeah, exactly. And with the bathrooms as well, I was thinking, I'm surprised more people don't accidentally walk into a women's or male bathroom at, like, say, Target, because we're all glued to our phones and no one's paying attention to anything around them. And I just walk into the front, first door I see a stall, I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm in the right bathroom. Like, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often now.
No, absolutely. A lot of that kind of stuff I feel is fueled by a lot of you can call it, I guess, fear mongering or
yeah,
people
exactly.
Just saying stuff that just isn't, you know, constituting any fact really. There's, you know, very few cases, if any cases, of, you know, stuff like this happening. Like, it's, but, you know, it's really in a sense of we need to sort of publicly, as a society, get to this consensus, at least a majority, of saying, this is wrong, this needs to be stopped.
Right.
And I like to think that we will get to that point with this case, or with this situation. But I think unless action and unless certain people are able to speak up and say, you know, that this needs to be stopped, then you know, I don't know what will come of this.
And you know, you brought politicians, and I should have played off that instead of the Target thing, because I just had thinking of everyone on smartphones. In fact, mine is sitting here in front of my computer screen as we're recording right now, because if I go within five minutes without having it on my hip, I have a mini panic attack, because that's how we're brought up in society now. But is there a worse politician to be handling what happened you know, on Saturday night into Sunday morning than Donald Trump?
I would say yes and no, because I think also he has an understanding of his audience, and I think he has an understanding of why he's doing what he's doing. I do think, in my opinion, I think one of the lowest things you can do in one of the largest, you know, American tragedies is to start a tweet by saying appreciate the congratulations. I think that shows a huge lack of empathy.
Right.
But I do think he has, he's one of those people who has led his supporters by fear, or has led them by a level of, you know, just drawing up interest to people. You know, he is always making sure he is on the lips of every person, no matter what it is.
Right.
And on whatever side it is, because he has been on different sides of the fence. Throughout his campaign, I feel. And you know, it's sad when the loss of 50 lives is something that you use to kind of, you know, further your campaign in this way, but I don't agree with it, I don't condone it, but I do think that he understands what he's doing. I think he's very conscious of what he's doing, and it's extremely unfortunate at the end of the day, but yeah.
All right. So we'll steer it back to wrestling here with what's going on you know, right now. Even the best, you know, regardless. Much like how we said about 10 minutes ago, where coming out shouldn't be a big deal anymore. You should be able to come out, say, I prefer my own men for instead of women, if you're male, or women for women, regardless. You know, it shouldn't be that big of a deal as it is. Darren Young came out probably, what, 3 years ago now, I think it was, before SummerSlam in Los Angeles?
I think so, yeah.
And it was met with a, cool, you're still a mid-card tag teamer, and you're still going to keep you the primetime players, and no one, people care, but no one cares. Is that a sign that, hey, wrestling gets it, and, you know, they're just going to continue doing whatever you're doing?
Yeah, I like to think so. I think wrestling has advanced in the same way that a lot of, like I said, a lot of smaller parts in society have advanced. I think that, you know, as great as it is, I think, to have somebody who is openly out say, you know what, I'm gay, you know, and to know that, like, that couldn't have happened, like, 10, 20 years ago in the wrestling business. Like, that wasn't a thing that was even close to possible to be happening. And that's not to say that there's people that weren't closeted at that time, because, you know.
Well, Pat Patterson, for one.
But, it's good to see, and it's good to see, for the most part, I think content-wise also very veering off of stuff that play into homophobia. To me, that's bigger than anyone sort of coming out. Like you said, him coming out and being like, I'm gay, and everybody being like, that's fine, we're cool. Like,
yeah.
That's amazing. I think also making the act of decision to kind of curb your content and your the stuff you put forward? Because obviously with the network, you have the ability to watch some stuff from, you know, past years of WWE and other promotions. And I've watched some of that stuff back, and it's very hard sometimes to even watch. Like some of the early, like, Goldust stuff, like, comes to mind, where, right, you know, the crowd is chanting some very horrible expletives at him, and Vince McMahon is talking about how Goldust is preying off homophobic fears of most men. Like, that's something that I don't think could have been, you cannot place that in modern day and people be okay with it. And it's good to see that. I think wrestling has advanced because we as a people, for the most part, I think, have advanced and have understood that, you know, it's not okay to kind of, you know, play into those stereotypes, so to speak. Not to say that certain wrestling doesn't do that still, because, you know, I think there are certain, you know, I've been to wrestling independent shows before of a southern nature, where some of the bigger, like, spots are, like, stuff in which they're like, you know, oh, this guy falls into another guy's crotch, or these guys accidentally kiss, or you know, stuff like that, like, because they know the reaction they're going to get.
Right.
And you know, I like to think that being curbed on a much bigger scale, so to speak, I like to think that people will be more comfortable when it comes to that kind of aspect of things. And like I said, at the end of the day, I never, like, when I came out, I never wanted to be the person to be like, oh, you can't say a gay joke, or you can't say this, or you can't say that. Because at the end of the day, if you're not meaning it in an offensive manner, I honestly don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to, like, if you're doing those kind of spots, you're doing them for a reason. You're doing them to evoke a certain emotion from people, going back to it. And, yeah, I think the less we do those kind of things, the better, because I think it trains our the larger wrestling audience to kind of have an understanding of, like, this isn't something we should be, like, booing and awing over, you know?
Or, like we said earlier, the Joey Ryan spot. No one really oohs and ahs over that. It's more of a, oh, yeah, this got over huge because it went viral.
Yeah.
And now no one thinks anything of it. You just think it's a funny spot we saw on YouTube, and he's making a ton of money off of it.
Yeah, I don't get the sense when he's doing the spot that the story of the spot is that, you know, he's forcing somebody onto somebody in a gay way or anything like that. I think the story of the spot is his genital region is very strong.
That's true.
I think that's kind of the point of it. And I think it's great to have stuff like that be more widely accepted and not be looked at as, you know, using that kind of thing to kind of get heat or anything in that way. Like, to use that in that kind of a platform and to be pretty widely accepted, I think is really good.
As one may have said at one time, a genetic jackhammer.
Yes. I think of anyone for him to refer to him as that, it would be Joey Ryan.
I bet in about a day or two, I will see that email pop up on ProWrestlingTees.com showing that's his new thing, with Joey riding his sunglasses with a jackhammer coming from his crotch.
Oh, I'm sorry. He knows how to make that money.
He does. He does exactly. There, I'll make sure I tag him in that and say, hey, trademark that idea. I want 10% of each to one of your t-shirt sales when it happens. You in a hard hat with sunglasses and a pop, and that little blow pop in your mouth and a jackhammer from your crotch. There, I just made you. I just sold 2,000 t-shirts for you. There you go. You're welcome.
Absolutely.
Nice. All right, so good. We'll end on that note as we're laughing and happy, and we're bringing it back to a more happy tone on there after we came out from that terrible stuff that happened in Orlando. So Inspire Pro coming back soon. Your podcast, plug that in. Anything else, Twitter, Facebook, anything way we can follow you there?
Definitely. Well, Twitter-wise, you can follow me at Eamon2Please. On Twitter, I usually tweet wrestling-wise stuff and you know, variety of other things, especially after this weekend. But also, you can check out Inspire Pro Wrestling. Follow us on Twitter at Inspire Pro Res, and also InspireProWrestling.com. Like TJ mentioned, we will be hopefully announcing our next event very, very soon, and we're very excited to announce that. And for to to find out about that as soon as possible, the best thing would be to follow us on all of our social medias, Twitter, Inspire Pro Wrestling, Facebook, Inspire Pro Wrestling. Just be sure to follow us in all kind of venues in that sort of way. I also do, as TJ mentioned, I also do my own podcast called The Wrestling Mayhem Show. We film live every Tuesday night at live.wrestlingmayhemshow.com, where we talk about sort of the main wrestling product. There's also a bunch of subsections of shows that we do where we talk about pretty much every televised wrestling product you can think of. And all of that can be found at wrestlingmayhemshow.com.
There you go. Even the upcoming CZW show on whatever wrestling channel it's coming up on, I'm sure it's amazing when some people get TV shows like that. I saw a report they just had their big tournament of death at some farm the other night, and the big spot was Danzig or Zandig or whatever his name is, putting a backhoe and burying the other owner under a bunch of dirt after they built a grave. So, somehow, if they can get a TV show, I think anybody can get a TV show.
Hey, good for them. You know, I'm excited when anyone gets the success, whether it's, you know, whatever style it may be. I think there's still an appeal to that kind of thing. So if you want to see people buried in dirt, go check out
CZW. I'll go watch Buried Alive from the WWE Network instead, where I know people are safe and protected and not like, they may have actually killed that guy. That might have actually happened.
Definitely.
All right, man. Well, thank you very much. We'll see you soon at the next Inspire Pro show. There we go. Just my own Michael Cole flubbing going on at the end of the show, and we'll have you on again soon. My God, terrible struggling. I am gassed and blown up and wheezing to the finish here.
No, absolutely. Thank you very much for having me on.